You're listening to The Blind Spot, a podcast from Thomas Pocklington Trust.
My name's Mike Bell. I am the National Public Affairs Lead for Sight Loss Councils and the Thomas Pocklington Trust. And I'm joined today by Councillor Steve Darling, who is the leader of Torbay Council in Devon. Torbay Council is a unitary council, so an all-purpose council in Devon. So Steve is a really key figure in his community, and we're going to talk to him today about some of the experiences that he's had leading his council, serving as a councillor, and particularly from the perspective of a person with a visual impairment. So hi Steve, thanks very much for joining us.
Hi then, good morning.
So can you tell us something about yourself, Steve, and how long you've been a councillor?
Right, so I'm 52. I've been a councillor for 28 years on Torbay continuously. I'm leader of Torbay. I have a particular passion for affordable housing, and also children's services are an area of particular interest to me. I think if I was to say what gets me up in the morning, what motivates me for being a councillor, I would say it's empowering our communities, it's tackling green issues, and it's also tackling poverty in our communities. So the three legs of that stool that why I'm a Lib Dem councillor.
Brilliant, thanks Steve. And so you've been a councillor quite a long time. What keeps you sticking at it? Because we do hear from a lot of councillors who find it a sort of tough and frustrating process being a local elected politician. So what keeps you going through it all?
I'm keen that we are more inclusive as a council, actually have high aspirations for our area, want Torbay to be the premier resort in the United Kingdom, want you know, not Torbay to be the second worst for having the numbers of kids who are in care, you know, want us to stop being the most deprived local authority in the southwest of England. You know, I've got high ambitions for Torbay and for our communities, and I represent one of the most deprived communities in Torbay, and it's really lovely that when I'm walking around one of our former council estates, you know, people shout over to me or we say, oh, it's our Steve and things like that. It's really being part of that community and being able to project the aspirations of that community into the town hall is really important.
We support a network of sight loss councils, so we've got lots of blind and partially sighted people who are campaigners and volunteers and supporters of our work. What advice would you have for people who want to get involved with and influence their council? What are your sort of top tips?
I think it's probably model yourself on a three-year-old of the type of questioning that they do, where they just ask why to everything is always worthwhile. I think it's don't be afraid of putting yourself forward. It is really important because I've been a councillor, you know, for such a long period of time. It's perhaps challenging for me to put myself back at that beginning position, but you know, everybody really does have something to offer, you know, a different perspective, and that is actually why councils with a number of elected members rather than, you know, the elected mayor system where it's one person trying to project themselves onto other people's views. You know, the reality is that by having that, you know, number of people with different perspectives, you can get better outcomes. And so by being engaging, and it's not being afraid to ask for help is the crucial thing for me. It's being fairly transparent with, you know, the first people, if you're wanting to engage with the council, is actually wanting to go through some of the paperwork. Now, 30 years ago, when I approached Torbay, one of the officers who supported the committee section, as it was then, actually sat in the lobby of the council and read through all the paperwork for the committee that I was going to go to, because they weren't able to put it in a more accessible format for me then. And they were really pleased that somebody was taking an interest in the council. And they ended up by sadly saying, there are, you've probably read it, you're probably more alive to what's going on than a number of the committee members who will be turning up to the meeting later on today. So it's don't be afraid to ask, because most people want to engage positively with people and are really pleased that people have that interest.
Yeah, that's really good advice, Steve. And it sounds to me like what your message is very much that, you know, get involved, find out what's going on and have your say, because people do genuinely, councillors do genuinely want to hear from people. In terms of some of the sort of campaigning tools and techniques that organisations and groups traditionally use, which ones do you think are the most effective from your experience? So, you know, thinking about things like petitions and, you know, public meetings and having a face-to-face session and that kind of thing. What do you think works really well and powerfully?
I think it's worthwhile being alive to how the local authority maps out its public engagement. I know historically lots of councils have had a 20 years ago they would have had proper mechanisms for engaging with different user groups, whether it's bus users or potentially people who might be cyclists, or also certain disabled groups. And it's interesting that as a small unitary authority, we've had £500 million worth of cuts and budget pressures over the last 10 years for us as a local authority. And we've got a 40% cut in staff. So you need to see how the local authority do that, and then you need to be alive to how can you engage. There may be some key decision makers that you think I need to walk alongside that person, engage with them, maybe inviting them out to do some sim specs or something like that if you were looking to engage with them. That maybe look at members' interests, that all councillors have to put what their interests are, what groups they may belong to, on the website, which should hopefully be accessible. Just see if there's anybody who has an interest that you think, this will chime with them. As far as petitions and things like that, I think social media, I think councillors probably do worry too much about what's going on social media, because it's a bit of here today and gone tomorrow. But I would exploit that fear of social media that many elected members will have, and you use that to a good degree, because if people are being tagged regularly on messages, then it does make them think. But I think it's also making sure that you're doing it in the right way. Because if you go too aggressive, then people will often just pull up the shutters and say, sorry, they're just a member of the awkward or hard to avoid people, and therefore not engage. So as long as you've mapped out what your campaign is, what your objectives are, and how you can, how you can achieve some of those milestones, those objectives, and seeing what you're alive to on that map of what the opportunities are on that route, then I think that there's every reason for success.
One of the messages that we hear a lot from people with a visual impairment is that so many of the challenges that they face in terms of their everyday lives and living independently are about the awareness of others and the awareness of the community and businesses. For example, they mean that, if somebody was actually thinking about the needs of someone with a visual impairment, they probably wouldn't do some of the things they do, thinking about things like, where A-boards get put or pavement parking and those kinds of things. What do you think the difference that being a person with a visual impairment has made to your council in terms of the way it approaches those kinds of issues?
I think that I would say that it means that, like, for instance, when there's a group who feels that they are being discriminated against, that I can actually say I've worn those shoes as well. Like for instance, what we try to do as a local authority, we try and get local groups or user groups coming and doing a presentation to cabinet and things like that. So I'm adopted myself, so hence that's probably where the seed of a passion for children's services comes from myself. But also as a visually impaired user, it's not too hard for me to put myself in the position of, let's say, a user group with learning disabilities who may feel a discrimination against them, and being able to say that, I've been out, like only last week we went to a restaurant and somebody was they said, oh well, your wife's got a guide dog, so we'll sit you over here on this part of the restaurant where nobody else is sitting. And you think, it is doing that positive challenge in a nice way. But as far as my disability, I try to wear it quite lightly as leader of the council, but I'm not afraid to refer to it like, you know, my, you know, I have the choice of macular degeneration, Stargardt's disease. So I'm not too bad at getting around, but quite often wheelie bins might jump out at me, and I've been on the waiting list for a guide dog now for probably 2.5 years. And I've just started to use a white cane. So I will refer that to that, you know, in a recent column when we were out knocking on doors in the by-election. So I tend to use it as a bit of background noise to raise awareness around disability issues rather than having it front and centre, because, you know, I don't want to be seen as the blind council leader, but the leader who happens to be blind is important to me.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it's really important, isn't it, for all underrepresented groups, but to see people who are able to get on and succeed in different roles. And I think it's really important that we do have more councillors who've got all kinds of different disabilities. Yes. And different backgrounds. Would you agree that it's important for blind and partially sighted people and those with disabilities to get involved and consider running for election themselves?
Yeah, I think it is so important, because when you look at the makeup of people who do get elected to the local authorities, you often find that they're mostly people who are of their own means, or of a certain age, or, you know, either semi-retired or retired. And I've been a councillor since I was in my 20s. And so it's just so important that we do get that greater depth of people, both younger folk. My wife is a councillor as well, so she's deputy mayor of Torbay with her guide dog. So we'll have the first guide dog owner next year as the worshipful mayor of Torbay, which is pleasing. But on more equality and diversity issues, it's, you know, our cabinet members from the Lib Dems, because we do it in partnership. We've got a gay member, a lady who has Arabian heritage, myself, who's registered blind, and also another lady who's got a Greek heritage. So it's just really important that our local authorities reflect their local communities. And it's fascinating that we've got one of the few black elected councillors on Torbay. And it's interesting how many, you know, even though Torbay has a low number of people who are black in it, how many black people Jermaine actually attracts to wanting to get involved in local politics, you know, so that, you know, that they end up being better represented. And it's so important for disabilities as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it's all about, you know, role modelling and showing people that that there need not be the barriers that maybe they might think to some of these things. And I certainly, the narrative you've given about Torbay, I think is reflected in lots of councils all around the country. Yeah. Where they do seem to be stuck in a set way of electing certain types of people. So yeah. I totally agree. I think the more
And I think also, I think now, because of modern technology, it is so much easier for people to engage with, you know, the paperwork that you get, or dealing with emails. You know, I can remember, you know, it wasn't that long ago when we used to get a satchel delivered to our houses with all the paperwork in it. And I'd have to either use a CCTV and struggle a bit, or get somebody to read through that with me of all a big pile of paperwork. Whereas now, you know, with, you know, Zoom text reading to me and JAWS and so forth, it is so much easier. And equally, even Apple devices, where they've got it hard, you know, that accessibility hardwired into them, is extremely helpful. That it isn't, you know, some of the barriers are not there. Once upon a time, I used to be on the planning committee, and I'd have to get an awful lot of read onto cassette tapes, which are, what are cassette tapes? I've almost forgotten what they are, but anyway. Mm.
One of the issues that has come up through the local elections this year and previously is how difficult it can be for a person with a disability to run for election. And we know that the government has withdrawn a national scheme that was about funding some of those exceptional costs that people with disabilities might face when running for election. And there were a number of cases of wheelchair users and deaf candidates who were not able to access the right kind of support. What was your experience running for election? You've obviously done it numerous times now over the years as a person with a visual impairment. And then, what do you think some of the solutions need to be?
It was probably only the last election, so 2 years ago, I benefited from that funding from central government. And I would say historically, I've had to effectively play off other people. In Torbay, we have multiple elected member wards, so it's usually two or three of you. So I would have to work off with a colleague with a clipboard historically. So that was just the way it was. You see, once you're a councillor, it's so much easier because you're able to perhaps help other people and they then want to help you, or you may be able to build positive links with other people in your local party who are keen, who believe in you and want to help you get stuff sorted. And so that's the way that I've done that historically. What I would say is that when I did benefit from that funding a couple of years ago with helping deliver leaflets, that was extremely helpful, because although I'm visually impaired and miss the odd wheelie bin and things like that and can't see the numbers to press on blocks, I've got still a reasonable amount of vision to get around with. So that would mean that perhaps I didn't fall down quite so many steps and things like that, and I could concentrate on other activities. It also meant that when I was out canvassing, somebody would come to the door and I wouldn't be trying to guess whether it's male or female, or discovering it was a child rather than a really short person. The person with me say, it's a woman or whatever the case is. But equally, I would say that there have been advances, on our in the party I belong to. We've got on the iPhone, there's something called Minivan, which is kind of accessible for people who are visually impaired. So you can go out and do the canvassing. But also phone canvassing is something that you can do. There aren't as many phone numbers as there used to be historically, but there is still more than a good reason to engage with people. And if you've the secret of engaging with people is actually not just do it at election time, but do it well before election time and perhaps engage with them on another subject so that they don't think you're just after your vote. You're there to try and improve their community. So it is a struggle. But as I say, I think technology has moved ahead and means of campaigning has moved ahead as well. Mm-hmm. But don't get sucked into thinking you can do it all by social media, because beyond there be madness.
Just to sort of wrap up the conversation, what do you think are the big challenges for local government over the next few years? Obviously, our campaigners and sight loss council members are very focused on arguing from the perspective of people with visual impairments, but it's always useful to understand the bigger context that local councils and local government is working in. So what do you see as being the critical challenges?
The critical challenge that we're going to be facing is going to be this autumn, and whether the Chancellor targets local government for further cuts. Local government is a shadow of its former self. We've lost 40% of our people who used to be there to help local communities. You can all be trying to do things smarter and so forth, but it is making sure that those connections are happening with the local community and challenging the council to be, what we're trying to be in the council where I'm leader of is more of an enabling council, saying we may not be able to do everything, but how can we work together to be able to get the best outcomes for us? So it is challenging the council, rather than just a computer says no approach, that there is that, real challenge. As far as you know, some of the bigger picture stuff, I think social care and the adequate funding of social care, both for adults and for children's services, are extremely important, especially for councils like mine, which are unitary, because the reality is if both of those costs are under control, then the rest of the local authority can tick over quite nicely. And that then means that some of what the public see, whether it's parks, gardens, street cleansing, etc., those bits out on the front everybody sees, can be a lot better managed as a local authority. So it is that social care element that is really important, and that's perhaps where we need to put that challenge in, because even if local authorities have got less money, they need to be smarter on how they're spending it, and we as visually impaired people need to be challenging on that so that they're, you know, doing the right thing sooner rather than later.
Great stuff. Thank you, Steve. And I really appreciate you taking the time out of your busy schedule to come and talk to us. And I'm sure that anyone who listens to this, you would warmly welcome to come and visit you in Torbay and see for themselves some of the work that's been going on there.
Lovely. No, it would be my pleasure. Thank you.
Brilliant. Thanks so much, Steve. Really appreciate it.
You've been listening to The Blind Spot, a podcast from Thomas Pocklington Trust. If you'd like to find out more about what we do at TPT, check out our website. Go to www.pocklington-trust.org.uk. And don't forget to subscribe to the podcast so you don't miss the next episode. Thank you for listening.